You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
And hello again, everyone. We are back with a brand new episode of the Pensburg Mailbag. And I will say this is a monster one this week. Generally, we're around 16, 17 questions as a total. Well, part one this week is 16 questions itself. Readers, you guys, listeners, you guys had a lot that you want to talk about this week. So we're going to dive right into it. As you can see, it is only myself and Snail. Garrett is, I believe, working this evening, so he cannot join us. He should be back for Mailbag Part 2 later in the week. But as for now, it is Snell and myself. And we're just going to jump right in here with question number one from Brian. Brian says, Josh Yoey put up a poll for the most overused word in sports. The choices were between GOAT, generational, and masterclass. In the pool, GOAT was chosen the most, but Josh seems to think that generational is the correct choice. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, you definitely hear GOAT thrown around a lot. And my gripe with that is my thoughts are, I don't have too many thoughts on this, but dude, you can't use the term GOAT so lightly. Like, I mean, there are some great players that are being called the GOAT, and they're not the GOAT. So I'd say pump the brakes on using that as much, but I'm also old and I don't know. I don't have too many thoughts on that, to be totally honest. So just stop using GOAT so much, and it loses its meaning and the value.
True.
When you overuse it like that. There are only a few GOATs in every respective sport, I think. And I think we all kind of, when you hear GOAT, you know who it is and who comes to mind. So let's chill on that term. And there's a million other dumb terms to use for just about anything these days. So let's give GOAT a rest. All right, moving on here. Brian, question two. The majority of the Eastern teams have an enforcer-type player. Do you think the Pens should have one too, just so teams don't think they can push around key guys?
Well, right now, I mean, an enforcer-type player is going to be a bottom-six-type player. And honestly, right now, I'd rather have more offense in that bottom-six than another guy who's just going to drag down the drag down their metrics and just make it more of a defensive, if he's even defensive. I mean, you have enforcers who are just out there for one thing and one thing only, and that is to flex their muscle. So right now, they have enough problems on the bottom six. I do not look forward to having another useless bottom six player. Maybe they're moving toward figuring out with Zahorna having a nice season debut on Saturday night. But I don't want another guy that's just down there that's going to eat 6-7 minutes a night just so he can be out there to make it to make them seem tougher and to not pick on the star players. Because I think we've seen in the past that even when they tried to shift to that kind of hockey, one, it affects their play in a negative way. And two, it doesn't make them a better team. And three, it doesn't deter any kind of injure type actions toward the star players. You're still going to get the cross checks. They're still going to get the slashes. They're still going to get the hard hits. It doesn't seem to really deter anything. And I'd rather focus on getting some offense in that bottom six right now rather than having an enforcer type player take up yet another roster spot and go against the what minimal cap room the Penguins currently have at the moment. But I understand the thinking. But I think by the season, by as the season goes along, all those Eastern Conference teams that have an enforcer type player will have those guys will be seeing the press box or the AHL more often than not as we go along in the season here.
Robbie, I have to interject here. This is like I agree. There are a lot of enforcers that are just like fourth line guys and they're relied upon in a defensive role. And they're relied upon in a defensive role, but they're not even necessarily like a defensive player. It's kind of funny. Like it can be silly at times. Like you can't convince me that like Milan Lucic on the fourth line in Boston is like a shutdown guy. Cause like, I think,
yeah,
I hate using the term metrics. I'm not a metrics guy. You can take your analytics and metrics and shove it in your, you know what? There are things in the game that are not dictated by analytics. There are things that are tangible, but they're not recorded on a score sheet that you can calculate at the end of the year. I think you need a guy, and it's not an, I don't even like to use the term enforcer, but I think you need a guy who can be out there and generate some energy and get the boys going. I mean, it's not even fighting. Like, what about a big hit? What about a guy who just like, dude, Brandon Tanev is not an enforcer, but that dude stirs the pot. That, and since the Penguins have lost him and like a Patrick Hornquist has had like one or two career fights. Like, he's not an enforcer. They need some guys with some heart and some jam. That's one thing watching these games the last couple of days. Dude, I lose my mind. That bottom six has no heart. There is no heartbeat. I don't think we need an enforcer, but I think we need a guy that can stir the pot, isn't afraid to make a big hit. That just gets the boys going. That gets the bench fired up, especially when it's clean. You don't want any silly garbage where it's like, you know, there's like a supplemental review or there's a suspension or it's a 5 minute and a game or something like that. Like, you don't want any monkey business like that, but there are players in the game. Like Zach Cassian, I think, is like a great example of that. He's not a heavyweight. He's not a goon. He has like a just a smidge of an offensive touch. He's pretty fast and he can just lay these big hits and he'll answer the bell. I think that kind of player is super important to a roster. And the East is stacked full of heavyweights, a modern day heavyweight, if you will. So I'll digress. I saw this question and it's just gotten me like a little, it's got my blood boiling a bit, but there is a spot on this team that I think that they should look to fill with that kind of player, not a dirty player, not someone who plays 4 minutes a night and can't make a pass, somebody that has jam and heart. I'll digress.
All right. Question number three is from Brian again. I think pretty much everything's for Brian tonight except one or two. So Brian here, switching away from hockey for a second. Any conspiracies you heard about your childhood that messed up your mind? Brian says the Rugrats theory where the babies were all dead and a part of Angelica's imagination really messes with him.
That sounds horrifying. I love conspiracy theories like that, like about like TV shows or whatever. Somebody has like a galaxy brain take and you're just like, wow, if you look at it that way, that's super messed up or horrifying. I think the pinnacle one for me at a young age that messed up messed my mind up. It was just The Matrix, like the movie The Matrix, and the idea that we live in like this simulation, and there's like all these like occurrences, and like, you know, then you go down that rabbit hole, and it's like there's like deja vu, and there's like numbers that you always see, and like the rule of three, things happen. I don't know, like you go down those kind of rabbit holes. Once you dip your toe in it, it kind of takes you. And like the whole Matrix thing is something today where it's like something weird happens and it's like almost like half jokingly, half not. You're just like, oh, that's some Matrixy type shit right there. So I'd probably have to say the biggest one would be The Matrix. And then I'm kind of like I kind of like occult stuff. I like conspiracy theories. I don't entertain all of them, but I think they're interesting and they get my brain going. And I have a big imagination. So that kind of stuff is like entertaining for me. We could do a whole podcast just dedicated to this question, going down rabbit holes of conspiracy theories. And I would love to do that, but I don't think Robbie and Garrett are here for that. And I think the majority of listeners are here for Penguin's takes. So I'll go ahead and just say The Matrix and we'll move on. What do you say, Rob?
Yeah, I kind of agree with you that I think, like, on the surface, the concept of conspiracies can be fun because they kind of give some salience to issues that we might not have answers to. They put an explanation to the unexplainable, I guess you could say. I know this is like a cliche one, but growing up, like, just aliens in general, like, I was a big outer space person. And I still am. I think the concept of outer space is really cool. Especially now that we have the technology to go like well beyond what we know and what we knew even 10 years ago. We're in different galaxies, all these different things. And the concept of like, is there other life out there? And I think that knowing what we know, just there's billions of just other planet forms out there can you really convince anyone there's not some kind of life form in another galaxy? It doesn't have to be humans. Like as we look, like Snail and I look, or like we look around our planet, but like some kind of, and I'm not talking about like little bacteria either. I'm talking some kind of intelligent life that has some kind of society, that has some kind of formed some kind of language, and that is living off the means of wherever they are. I find that really hard to believe that there's nothing else out there, like what we know, that there's nothing else out there. Not saying that like the UFOs we investigate, our government's investigating, are necessarily that, but, and we're talking about maybe light year, like millions of light years away. We're talking just stuff that we can't even fathom. That, because if space is never ending, then there's something out there somewhere that you have to think that there's some kind of other intelligent life form out there.
Yeah, even if it's not like we like to we have these like this imagery of like gray aliens and like all the like UFOs in the traditional sense that we know here. And it's like, what about like, what if there was just like an intelligent algae on like a planet that has like water on it? You know, that's still an alien. Like, that's still considered an alien. And it's like, it's actually really horrifying to think if we are alone in the universe, like if there's nothing out there, it's just Earth. Like, I'd feel like we're an error. Like, this is a blip on the radar. We're not supposed to be talking about hockey with the internet and computers and driving cars and traffic and government. It's just like, I don't know. That's a whole rabbit hole that you can really, really get dragged into.
Yeah. Maybe they have some kind of hockey like sport on planet Blue Blast it would be similar to hockey. It's not hockey, but played some weird way, played on, like, give me another kind. I mean, there's only so many, at least in our world, there's only so many kind of surfaces you can play stuff on, but maybe it's played on clouds or something like that. Maybe it's
on
like
gas,
frozen nitrogen, like surface or something like that. I don't know. I'm just,
and hockey to them is they just fight on the ice, and when there's a penalty, they have to shoot, they have to play with the puck for 2 minutes.
Yeah, just, yeah, it's, yeah. Something bizarre like that. But all right, so I know that question was for Snail, but this one is also for Snail. So I'm going to ask him this one first, from Brian. this is a snail question since he's into spooky season. Do you have a much watched spooky movie? One that you have to watch every year. Like, I know you said you've been going and watching a bunch, but is there absolutely one that is on your list every year, no matter what?
Yeah, it's straight up like Halloween, the franchise Halloween. Like, the OG one is like a must watch that, and like the remakes or like the continuations that they've made in the last few years with like Halloween, Halloween Kills, and Halloween Ends. Those have actually been great movies. Like, if you're a fan of the franchise, you're probably a fan of those. The Halloween franchise is a must watch, but some honorable mentions I will say is Beetlejuice, with like the OG Beetlejuice. I don't actually know if there've been a ton of remakes. I know there was a cartoon, but the movie Beetlejuice, it's a Tim Burton film. Mm-hmm. Sleepy Hollow as well. Recently, I think it was last year, maybe the year before, they came out with a Resident Evil movie, Raccoon City. And I don't know, Robbie, are you familiar with the Resident Evil, the games and whatnot?
Yeah. Yep.
Big fan of that stuff. And Raccoon City is kind of like, I mean, it's like a cheaper production movie, but it's great. And it really gets me in the mood for Halloween. I think if anyone out there is a fan of Resident Evil, and I know there's like a whole like series of movies that were made in the early and mid 2000s, I think, right? Like, there's like a whole Resident Evil franchise.
Like, whole, like, extended universe.
Yeah, extended universe.
Like, kind of like an MCU for Resident Evil movies. I'm trying to think who was in that. Was that,
I forget that actress's name.
Was that Kate Beckinsale?
I don't know. I don't know if I could even tell you her name. I can picture her, but those movies, I'm not talking about those. Those are like,
oh, okay.
Those are kind of more like action-y movies, I feel like.
Yeah.
This is like actually like kind of like more of like a spooky telling of Resident Evil. If you've played the second game, Resident Evil 2, it's basically just like a cinematic telling of that game. It's awesome. There's like a cartoon series, but it's like, it's kind of like The Simpsons or Futurama. It's not exactly for children. It's more of like an adult's. It's called Over the Garden Wall. Every Halloween or spooky season, I throw that on. It's a short series, one and done. Super classics. Gets you in the mood for Halloween. And then I also like OG, like Are You Afraid of the Dark and Goosebumps. Like, some of those are kind of hard to watch. Like, those were definitely geared more towards kids, but there's some pretty scary episodes that I like try to watch every year. It just kind of gets me in the mood. It reminds me of being a kid. Those shows were always on around Halloween. They'd make it'd be a prime time thing. So it's a little bit longer list, but than what Brian asked for. But those are all on my to do list for this week before Halloween.
Good deal.
All right, let's see here. Where are we at? I think we're at question number five. And the question is, do you think this is the last dance for Flower? If so, with the new ownership in place having no loyalty to him, do you see them signing him to a one-day contract so he can retire where it all started? I think I speak for most Pens fans saying that that's what they want.
Well, it certainly feels like it's Flower's last run, and he kind of hinted toward it in the offseason as well. Everything that happened in Montreal last week with kind of like all his family there, his final game in his where he grew up with his hometown or against his hometown team. It definitely feels like it. It's the last year of his contract. He's 38. He's done, I mean, three cups, a Vezina. He's done literally just about everything. He's going to end his career second in wins all time behind Marty Brodeur. Everything points to him being it. I think a big tell will be what happens when the Wild come to Pittsburgh this season. Obviously, that's going to be a deeply emotional game because it could very well be his last game in Pittsburgh. As for the one-day contract stuff, it's been something I have been calling for since you knew his career was starting to tick down. I know that the Fenway Sports Group has no ties to Flower, but they seem to want to do right by the franchise. And I definitely think that you could see a one-day contract with the Penguins just so he can retire with the franchise he deserves to be remembered for. He won the three cups here. I know he won his Vezina in Vegas, and he's a major part of Vegas history, and he deserves to get his, no pun intended, flowers out there as well. Again, I've rode the horse for retiring his number as a part of this group. I know a lot of people might disagree on me with that, but again, yeah, it wasn't always great, but you don't win three cups without him being the first piece back in 2003. So, I think he'll get a one day contract in Pittsburgh. And I definitely feel like all signs point to this being his final season in the NHL.
Dude, would you like to see Flower in the organization like after retirement? Is he someone you'd like to be around the team more in some capacity?
I definitely feel like he would be helpful in the organization. I don't doubt that. What I doubt is his want and willingness to do it. I really feel like once he's done, at least I'm not saying like 2 or 3 years down the road, but he's been doing this literally since he was 18, 19 years old. His kids are still growing up and young. I think he would probably like to raise them in Quebec, in where he grew up. So I could definitely see him being turning into a family man for a couple years. Now, once they get older, and again, it's hard to step away from the game as a player. Maybe that hunger comes back a little bit and he can get himself in a role as an advisor, a goalie coach, a goalie scout. I could definitely see him being back in hockey at some point, but I really think that for the first couple years, he's going to step back from the game and become a family man. Could be wrong, but those are the vibes I get from Flower, and those are kind of the vibes I've always gotten from 29.
True. I'm actually going to jump in here because this is definitely a question for Robbie. I know nothing about this Fire Canada, but Brian asks, do you think Fire Canada chants will continue to happen until the chant comes to fruition? It made its way to College Game Day yesterday in the pregame for PSU versus OSU. And this is a general curiosity since I'm not a Steelers fan and never have been.
Yeah, that's it's definitely spreading, and Penn State is PSU, Ohio State is OSU. I definitely feel like, I mean, it's kind of a meme at this point, though, almost. Again, it's definitely spreading, and again, Ohio State's not that far removed from Pittsburgh, so there's definitely some Steelers fans around there, especially with Penn State fans traveling out there to that game. But yeah, I mean, I don't think it's going to come to fruition during the season, so it'll keep up. Basically, until it's in some way until there's a finalization to that situation. But yeah, it's become basically a meme at this point. I'm not even sure how. It's definitely not effective because nobody with any serious pull within the Steelers organization is listening to the fans when it comes to that kind of stuff. But yeah, until something happens on that front, you're definitely going to hear it popping up throughout the city and maybe even spreading. All right, we'll give Snail question number 7 here. What's the feeling about seeing Ryan Shea and Radim Zahorna getting some game action? I'd imagine Dubas has some say in this considering how bad the bottom six play was last year and no changes were made really all season, and we're only 6 games in and we have a shakeup already.
So I feel like what I'm about to say is unfitting to my character because I'm known to overreact, but I think that this isn't even a shakeup. It's the first 6 games of the season. Like there was a lot of competition in camp, roster spots in the bottom six and that bottom pairing were not cemented. It was like, this was probably going to be a part of the program at some point early on in the season. This Ryan Shea guy was a 4th round pick by Chicago. And I was curious about him. He had some pretty decent numbers in the AHL, actually, with Texas. Yeah, and he made his debut with the Penguins just this last game, wasn't it?
Yeah, Saturday night.
So he had some decent numbers, like I said, in the AHL. But I don't know. You got to give this kid a look. I think that he... I don't want to say that, like, it'll be interesting because one thing that the Penguins notoriously aren't good with is And this isn't really totally their fault, but it's like they kind of have a they don't have the patience to develop some of their prospects. They're kind of, they've been in this like win now window for a long time. And unless you're like a Jake Guentzel who can jump in and score two goals in their debut and become a top six player, like we saw it with Daniel Sprong, like Daniel Sprong's turned into a pretty decent goal scorer in like a bottom six role where he's been, Seattle and Detroit. We didn't really have the patience to develop him and give him too much of a leash. You're seeing it with Sam Poulin, Pustinen, I mean, Zahorna even. They gave up on him. I don't want to say they gave up on him because obviously he's back, but he was a casualty to the line. You know, he was out the door pretty fast, where he had shown some promise. He scored on his first shift, first shot. I'm glad he's back. I'll be curious to see the impact that he can make. He's not going to be Cale Makar jumping in and being on the power play by any means. He's in a limited role. It's third pairing minutes. So I'll be curious if he can have any sort of effect on the game sheet. I'm probably not really looking at him for offense. I'm looking at him more for probably keeping bad things from happening on the ice when he's playing. But yeah, not super shocked that there's been this quote unquote shakeup. I think they're just trying a couple looks, see if something sticks. They need to get a dub. So I think keeping Zahorna in the lineup is only going to benefit you. I think he had a pretty good camp, and I love the Zahorna guy. He's just this massive body. He plays with some finesse. He's got hands. He's got speed. I think he's somebody that could be a perfect fit in your middle six. So that's how I feel about it. Robbie, I'd be curious, do you have any thoughts on Zahorna and Shea getting a look last game?
Well, Zahorna was very impressive in game one. He really added a boost to that third line. The third line played his best game of the season. Ryan Shea, he was a guy. I mean, he was along Chad Ruedel. I don't think P.O. Joseph was the problem. I think Ruedel was the problem. With that bottom third pairing, and I didn't like P.O. Joseph coming out of the lineup. Shea was fine. He wasn't great, nothing spectacular, didn't really do much to write home about, good or bad. But Zahorna was the big takeaway, played a really great game, finally got the bottom six on the scoreboard, and really added some juice to that third line. Eller and O'Connor both played their best games of the season as well, and that third line was really clicking, and everything. The big takeaway from that game was Zahorna. He's earned his spot in the NHL, and he needs to keep it until as long as possible. I see no reason to even think about sending him anywhere right now. He played tremendously.
Agreed. I think he's somebody that needs it. He just provides that like speed, like in the bike. He's like a total, like he should be like a Sullivan's wet dream out there. He's big. He's doesn't take dumb penalties. He's fast. He's got hands and a score. He's not lighting it up, but he's got a scoring touch. I think Zahorna definitely needs it. I mean, it's on him to remain consistent, but let's try to keep that third line intact maybe for a little while and see if they can't get something going. That might be I'd like to see more of that. Let's see here. Where are we at? Question 8, I believe, from Brian. And he asks, how does Garrett and Robbie feel about Mark Madden? Personally, he's not my favorite Pittsburgh media personality, but to each their own. If Snell knows who he is, I'd like his opinion as well. No idea who Mark Madden is, really. I mean, the name.
Yeah.
Does he do like a sports show?
He's radio, yeah. And bless
radio.
You, not really knowing who he is. Mark Madden's a very well-known Pittsburgh sports media head. He's been in Pittsburgh for basically his entire life. He was actually big in wrestling at one point, too. But he's basically, and again, he is in the know in Penguins world. He's very close with Mario. But yeah, his opinions, he's always had a personal vendetta against Evgeny Malkin. He was basically one of the lead drum bangers on the Vincent Trocheck to Pittsburgh and get rid of Malkin. That offseason, Malkin was a free agent. He's been like that since Malkin's like third or fourth season in the league. He's been very anti-Malkin. he's been anti a lot of athletes in Pittsburgh that are not Penguins. Basically hosts a radio show. Some players decide not to go on, and rumor is that's where the grudge comes from. Overall, yeah, I don't like him. I know he does have a pretty strong following, but it seems like in the past 5 years, that following has kind of been like, kind of gotten fed up with it, and it's kind of whittled away a little bit. But yeah, as long as he's on the radio, he's going to command an audience. He's very much a guy who's figured out that if he gives the hot takes, his name's going to get out in the world, and people are going to basically, even if he's getting the hate, he loves the attention. So it's best just if you see something from him, it's best just to ignore it. But some people feed into the madness, and it just kind of gets out of hand. All right. Question number 9 from Brian. What was your reaction to what Dubas said while being interviewed on TNT? And I believe this is referencing the intermission interview he did last week when they were playing. I can't even remember who at this point, but
Detroit.
Detroit. Yes. He was on with the TNT crew during intermission.
So I'm like the worst person for this question, because I had to go, I went and made dinner during that first intermission. I didn't even know Dubas was on TNT or whatever. Did you catch what he said?
Yeah. I mean, the gist of it was, I know we have a lot of improving to do, and that's on me to fix it. He kind of basically knew that there were still many issues with this team, and they just have to sit down and work on them. There's no, it's not going to be a snap your fingers and the problem's fixed. He knew coming into the season, the roster wasn't perfect. He knows where improvements need to be made. And basically the ultimate takeaway from Penguins fans was, well, at least he acknowledges there's an issue. And then literally like the next day you had the Harkins demotion and the Zahorna promotion. And that's kind of, yeah, that was kind of the first move. And basically the gist of it was, I know there's problems, it's on me to fix it, and we're not going to sit in our hands, we're going to go out and do it.
I see. Okay. Yeah,
that's basically the gist of it.
So Raquel for Garland confirmed?
I don't think they're trading Ricard Raquel.
Okay, fair. Let's see, was it your question?
Since 10? I answered most of that one, I'll give this one to you. This is from Brian, question number 10 here. Have we noticed if Rusty has gone back to his old stick glove combo? He's back to finishing chances to start the season that he had a tough time with last season. Snail, I know you're a hockey equipment guy, so have you noticed anything with what Brian Rust has been using on the ice?
Oh yeah, I'm always keeping an eye out for what gear people are using, and Rust is still a true guy. So last year he made the switch from I couldn't remember if it, I think he would use like CCM and Bauer. Like I don't think he had like I don't think it was set in stone, but he'd switched from Bauer to True, and True's becoming pretty popular. Like Tyler Bertuzzi uses True, Ryan Johansson uses True, Mitch Marner is a True guy. So it's becoming a more popular brand, and I don't know if you've seen the show Shorzy, but all the hockey players in the show Shorzy use True gear, which I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah, I know what show you mean.
I think he's using a different model. He's using like the newest model of True Catalyst. Last year he used the True Hazardous, which is a pretty decent hockey stick. And then this year, the True has a new one. It's the True Catalyst 9X3 or 9x3. I don't know how you really... I've never heard it pronounced before, but it's like the Catalyst 9X3. And it's it's like 350 grams. It's pretty lightweight. It's got the foam core. It's a good stick. And True's really starting to become a player in the game. So there's not too many NHLers using it though yet. Another guy on the Penguins who is using that, he's actually gone now, was Ryan Poehling, was a True guy. So you're seeing like some high end skill guys like Marner. Oh, Brady Tkachuk uses True also. So you got some of those guys, and then you got some like bottom six type of guys using it. It's pretty cool to see. But yeah, he is using he's using the same brand but a different model this year, and it's working for him, man. He's got a hot hand so far this year, and I'd like to see one the hot hand continue. But looking to see if anybody, that's something I'd love to ask to Heinze. It's like, who, like, I love when players shake up. I'd love to get into the mind of Heinze and know, like, what was the discussions, like, some of these players making big switches. What's up with Gino using two different brands of glove on each hand, like that kind of stuff. I'd love a chance to get to talk to him about just gear in general. He'd probably hate that. That's like his worst nightmare.
I mean, after doing it for like 35 years, you probably, yeah, get tired. I mean, he's probably seen, like, he's probably like an unlicensed psychologist with some of these players. Like, I mean, the using two different brands, that just reeks of superstition. Like, Malkin, like, had a dream one night and, like, he scored like a hat trick while wearing these two different brands and was just like, oh, I need to change all these. It's so weird because, like, NHL players are signed all these brand deals, Bauer, CCM, Easton, and like all these, and like they're out there using just like a mishmash of different types of equipment. It's kind of like, you don't see that in like many other sports. Like, if you're a Nike guy, you're a Nike guy. If you're an Adidas guy, you're an Adidas guy. Whereas in hockey, it feels like, if something goes right while they pass by a billboard that has like an Adidas logo on it, and like they hit every green light after that, they're going to start using like Adidas equipment and stuff like that. It's just a really weird, again, hockey's just kind of weird like that, but
yeah, a lot of superstition in hockey, and a lot of just if something works one night, you just kind of keep it going, no reason to change.
Yeah. And like, I'd never heard of True until you'd start coming on. Like, you're much more into the gear than I am. I know the big brands and stuff like that, but like, I never really knew about True. And then like Brian Russ out here being like a trailblazer along with like Brady Tkachuk and Mitch Marner is pretty crazy. It's just, I mean, hey man, I don't care what brand Russ uses as long as he's putting up like 20-25 goals. So, I mean, I'll take the hot start with whatever piece of lumber he's using.
Agreed. I think True, I like True. I actually have a lacrosse stick that's True, and I heard they just recently got out of the game of lacrosse, which is funny, but True's kind of an interesting brand. There's like a lot of rumors kind of about them. Like, I don't know how many of them are true. True actually used to be that brand, the hockey stick brand Ballistic that Jager used to use. It's like, and those were like, I mean, they never really took off with that name. But their technology is like what's really interesting. I've heard rumors. I actually heard this from a guy at the lacrosse and hockey shop here in Seattle. He was saying that True, they have like some sort of contract with like Boeing, and they get a lot of like materials, like aerospace materials that they use. They incorporate somehow into their products. I think they also make like wheelbarrows and like heavy duty.
Oh,
like
I know who. Yeah, okay.
True Temper Sports. They make golf stuff, baseball.
Yeah, okay, if it's True Temper, then I'm more familiar with them. I thought it was just like True. Yeah, True Temper makes like their portfolio is like literally they have their hands in like everything. I know
everything.
I think they may have even made lawnmowers at one point, but I definitely have seen their wheelbarrows and stuff and. Golf shafts, they're really big into golf shafts and stuff like that. So I do know who you mean. I didn't realize when you just said True, but when you said True Temper, whether or not that's the name they go by anymore, but True Temper is very popular, in a lot of different, fields.
Yeah. If you go to their website, like if you were to look up, like, if you wanted to order something from their warehouse, it actually is like True Temper Sports True Temper is their umbrella, and then you can go down to like whatever category, but their sticks just say True on them. But they do have like a little TT, like a little logo that's like two T's for True Temper. Anyways, we can move on. But yeah, Rust is using a different model, same brand. I think he's probably getting paid by True, so good for him bringing a little extra cheddar now that he's a dad. And let's just hope he keeps lighting the lamp.
Absolutely agreed.
So let's see here. Moving on to question number 11 from Brian as well. And Brian asks, this could cause some great debate here. And this question is, what is the GOAT Halloween candy? And what he means is, what is the greatest Halloween candy of all time? I really hope nobody says candy corn.
So I'm not going to answer this question, because what I'm going to do to make sure we get listeners is tell Brian and anybody else listening that next week we are recording our candy draft. So to find out that answer, you have to listen to that episode. I believe we're recording it on Monday the 30th. It should be out on the 31st, which is Halloween. So, Brian, I am not answering that question this week. Snail is not answering that question this week. You will have to listen to that episode and find out and listen to the debate on what we believe is the goat candy. I have my choice. Sure, Snail has his. Garrett probably has his. And again, if we ask this question to 100 people, we could get like 85 different answers. But you have to listen to that episode coming out next Tuesday the 31st to find out the real answer to this question.
And Brian, you're not dealing with like three just like we aren't like half-assing this at all. This is going to be like, I mean, there's stakes involved. Like, we haven't even determined yet who's going to get to pick first, because there's order to this. We live in a society here. This isn't going to be just some like half-assed thrown together thing. Like, this is going to be, this is determining, like, their first overall is at play right now, and it is yet to be determined. I don't think we need to go into how it's being determined, but let's just say Sidney Crosby is going to be determining who gets first overall pick. Correct. Of the candy, of whatever candy, whatever candy it is that's going first overall. And if you think that we just have our eyes set on one candy specifically, no, we've got boots on the ground. I've got my, I'm scanning aisles. I'm looking, I'm trying new things. I'm trying old things. It's going to be this is going to really settle a great debate amongst Robbie, Garrett and I, but hopefully for our listeners as well.
Yeah. So make sure you tune in next Tuesday. There'll obviously be a couple episodes of other stuff before then, but keep your eyes and ears peeled. And
Halloween, be ready.
Yeah, it's Halloween. You can't miss it. It'll be Halloween, so get ready for that. We will give you a that's just a little teaser. So I'm not going to give you the answer now. Question number 12 from Brian: what is your favorite Geno tweet? Just read that tomato fruit. True. Is mine. Geno is pure comedy.
Yeah, I actually will admit I don't follow Geno on Twitter. I'm really superstitious. I don't follow players on social media. One, because I don't know. It's just like, I just don't want to mess with, I just, not that me following them would have any like outcome on a game. I think like one time I followed some players on the Penguins and on social media, and then I think that was like the year 2018, and I was just like, oh, that was just a shitty outcome to that year. They lost to the Capitals and the Capitals won the cup. So as dumb as that may sound, I don't really follow him, but I do know that like Geno does this thing where like if he has a good game, he'll just like post like a selfie. Like, he's like pretty silent on social media, but then like if he goes like, you know, 3 assists, 1 goal or something, he'll post just like after the game, you know, he's in his locker. He's in his locker stall feeling good. And he just posts like a selfie of him in a suit, or like a selfie of him just like in the locker room with like the thumbs up. Like, I think he's hilarious. He's like sneaky funny. I can't wait for maybe post career if he comes out and like does some interviews. And I'd love to know more. I'd like to know his personality a little bit more, because we get so limited. But maybe I will start following him on social media, I guess, if he's kind of a clown. What about you, Rob? Do you follow him?
Yeah, I mean, he has that kind of personality where he's just kind of he's actually better in the off season when he's, you never know where he's gonna be posting from. Sometimes he'll be down on a boat in Miami with a fish, like 10-foot long fish. And he's just a character. He's just a very unique personality, and I'm glad we get to enjoy him in Pittsburgh. And we talked about Flower earlier, but he's one guy that I would hope at least part-time still lives in Pittsburgh, because he's a true joy.
All right, question number 13 here from Brian yet again. And Brian asks, do you see Geno scoring his 500th career goal this season? Hard to bet against that at this pace, right?
He needs 25. He scored 27 last year. He has 4, so he'd have 29 total this year. He hasn't hit the 29 mark since the aforementioned 2017-2018 season. Again, now there's some short years in there, coming back from injury. Like in 21-22, he only played 41 games, but he scored 20 goals. So he was on pace for 40 goals that year. Can he get to 29? He would need 25 more. I think it's entirely plausible. I'm not going to say, like, I wouldn't bet on it just because you never know what's going to happen throughout the season. But at his pace that he's playing right now, he's still at 4 goals in 5 games. That would be a tough pace to keep up. But if he keeps playing like he is, I think he can absolutely get 25 more this season. Ask me again at New Year's. But I definitely think it is a plausible outcome if he gets 500 this year. Would be awesome, but if not, next year. So he's going to get there. It's just depending on end of this season, beginning of next season.
Dude, barring any injury, I think Gino will have 20 goals by January. Like, I think if he's healthy and he's keeping pace, like, I don't think he's going to, I mean, Gino's known to have some sleepy nights now and again. But dude, I think that this is going to be, like, again, with health in mind, this could be Gino's, like, his last monster year. Like, offensively, yeah. I think this is, it's like looking like that. He's just got so much piss and vinegar in him, and he's just looking so good. It's like I said, Gino can have sleepy nights now and again, but we haven't seen one yet. I'm saying 25 goal, or he's going to have 20 goals by New Year. And then I think he's good. Put me down for Gino putting up 30, I'm going to say 32 goals this year.
All right. Brian here, he wanted to add some context to the brat story from last week when he said that he cooked brats at like 8 a.m. or something. He basically said, my daughter was just born and I just woke up wanting them, not drunk, not sleep deprived, and I read this as just one giant excuse.
Yeah, no, I think that's valid. He's probably exhausted and he wakes up and he wanted three brats, man. I don't hate.
I mean, brats are good. I mean, you eat them when you got them, but you just admit it, man. Just, hey, I wanted brats 8 a.m. I wanted brats. You don't need to justify it. We're not mad about it. We're just like, we understand. Just own it, man.
I wish that he was just crippled. You should just lie to us, Brian. Just lie to us and, like, don't let a lie get in the way of a good story.
Just gaslight us all the time.
Just tell us that you were just, like, crippled and you walked in the door at 5 a.m. You hadn't slept yet and you just fired up the grill.
You were so drunk that you were actually crippled yourself and you just fired up the brats at 8 a.m. It's a better story than my daughter was keeping me awake.
Agreed. Let's see. Where are we at?
I'm going to ask you this one because it's more, okay. You're more of a music head than I am. In your opinion, what was the best decade for music?
I don't know. That is so controversial because what is best? Like, best for me personally, I don't know. It's weird because I think like the 80s, like there was just this boom in like, I mean, like 80s music is like, you can go to like, you can buy an 80s album. Like you could go to like a music store and buy like the best of the, there's a lot of good music that came out in the 80s. Not necessarily all what I would consider the best music, but there's a lot of good music. Like I listen to actually a lot of music that came out in the 80s. Being in Seattle, the 90s, the early 90s into the mid and even a little bit into the late 90s, like grunge was like so popular and prominent that like you could argue that that was the best era. It like created a whole Seattle sound out here. But then I grew up mostly in the late 90s, the early 2000s, mid 2000s, and a ton of great music came out then too. Like I think some of my favorite music is probably a mix of like early 2000s, and then there's like a massive jump to like early 90s stuff. So I think for as far as best goes, like best as in like widely universally loved music, I would probably say like the 80s. Yeah. But for me personally, I'm gonna go with I'm going to go with like with the 90s in general, the entire decade of the 90s, just so much good music came out during them. A lot of like subgenres kind of coming out, a lot of like independent music kind of coming out, like garage rock stuff, independent labels. A lot of interesting stuff came out in the 90s. So universally 80s, personally 90s. And then I think this brings us to our last question of the mailbag. Question number 16, and boy, talk about answering the bell. I think, Robbie, we got to kind of answer the bell here and give this question a little bit of time and attention, because Tony Gale, he's coming to defend his homeland. An English breakfast, he says, the greatest breakfast known to man. It consists of fried egg, pork sausage, smoked bacon, hash browns, baked beans, mushrooms, tomato, fried slice, and toast. Black pudding is optional. Some love it, some hate it. The food here is good, he says. Check out an English roast dinner, a Cornish pasty, yeesh, and shepherd's pie, beef Wellington, chicken tikka masala. That's tikka masala's fire. And the classic fish and chips, which is fish and chips is, oh yeah, fish and chips. Yeah, exactly. Battered fish and French fries. Also, I'm with Garrett on the well done meat thing. Steak cooked medium to well done for me. It's the only way.
Well, I mean, medium is fine. It's the well done that drives me crazy. But all right, so a lot to break down here.
There's a lot to unpack in this.
Tony, your food better taste good because you colonize half the world for all these spices. Your food better have some flavor to it.
Oh, that's the best argument ever.
So honestly, the English breakfast, that would kill me if I ate that every day. Extremely heavy. That would be, again, I'm sure you don't eat it, and maybe there are people that are, but that's a lot,
dude. The English breakfast is a summer barbecue.
Yeah, it sounds all good. I would eat it. Black pudding is optional. Okay, so we'll correct that. Some love it, some hate it. I've never had it, but I would try it because I'm willing to try anything at least once. If I don't like it, you don't like it. But
Cornish pasty sounds X-rated.
Yeah, Cornish pasty definitely sounds like we're gonna have to put an explicit tag on this. Shepherd's pie is good. I cannot argue with that. I will not argue with a beef Wellington.
What is a beef Wellington exactly?
It's a big roast, like a long roast wrapped in pastry.
Is it beef? Oh, I guess, yeah, it would be beef.
It's a beef roast, yeah.
So it's a beef roast inside of like a pie crust, essentially?
Basically, yeah.
Okay.
Tikka masala, absolutely. That is bomb if made well. I can't argue with that one. I'm sure Snail could get some bomb vegan tikka masala if he wanted it.
Oh, yeah.
That's bomb. Fish and chips is just, yeah, that is what England's known for. That is like the dish that if you think of English food, that's probably the first one's going to come to your mind. I love good French fries. I would kill for good French fries. I love good French fries. The fish for me, as long as it's done well. If it's done overdone or underdone, that's a killer for me. I know people like vinegar on their fish and chips. I am not a vinegar fan at all. But yeah, I'm not saying the food's bad. I'm just saying that that's a lot for breakfast.
Shocking. Like seeing like an English breakfast, like it's like a, it's kind of, it's like shocking.
I could go to a buffet and not get that much food. I could go to a buffet and that's not get fair. All that
yeah.
Food. Yeah. Again, I love bacon, hash browns, bomb, baked beans at breakfast. Hey, not my thing, but maybe it's yours. I like baked beans for other meals, just not at breakfast. I'm not a fan of tomatoes, really. I can tolerate them in certain dishes, but not a go out of my way to eat them. Toast, I mean, toast is toast. Unless it's black, you can't really mess up toast. Mushrooms, if done correctly, I can eat. Eggs, yeah, fried eggs I could eat. I'm not a huge egg fan. I mean, it sounds all great. It just would kill me. I could never eat that before going to work. I'd fall asleep. No way I could eat that and go to work. That would have to be like a Sunday morning, like sit down meal. I could not eat that and go to work. I'd pass out.
Yeah, it's a lot of calories, but hey, you know what? It's we're not insulting your culture, Tony. It's just shocking to see. And also, like, we're American. Like, it's like our job. It's like our duty to, like, chirp the English breakfast, I think. So no offense, but, you know, we're just doing our due diligence.
We're just doing our patriotic duty.
Our patriotic duty, indeed. There's a lot of other good food. Like, a shepherd's pie is fire.
Oh, yeah. You can't. Oh, you could. But, yeah, I love a shepherd's pie.
I'll have to look up what a Cornish pasty, what that
just
is.
Make sure you do that away from, make sure you're on, like, incognito mode when you.
Yeah, I'm going to have to delete my history after it. And then fish and chips. I mean, being in the Pacific Northwest, we got fish and chips out here, too. That stuff is, I mean, I don't eat it anymore, but it's delicious. I loved a little vinegar on my fish and chips. Okay. Little tartar sauce for the French fries. Smell you later. So, yeah, I mean, a lot of good food came out of is England, right?
Yeah.
Britain, England.
Yeah, Britain, England, you know, same difference.
So thanks for chiming back in on that, because that took up quite a bit of airspace last time that the English breakfast came up.
It did. All right, that is 16 questions done and dusted for part one of our weekly mailbag. Part two, Garrett did not even send out the list for part two, so I am going to wait and be surprised for when he does. Tune in later this week for that. Obviously, we have three Penguins games on the docket this week, meaning we'll get three recaps for you guys starting tomorrow night, or I guess tonight by the time this comes out, against the Dallas Stars. And again, I teased it earlier. Snell teased it. You got to tune in on Halloween where we do our candy draft and we can answer what is the goat candy for Brian. So make sure not to miss that. But for now, that's all I got. Snell, you got anything before I wrap this up?
No, I just wanted to mention quickly, tomorrow, today, whenever you get this, it's going to be, I think, the premiere of the Frozen Frenzy on ESPN. Correct. All 32 teams are playing, and they're going to be demonstrating what we believe is to be some new technology into tuning in to all the action tomorrow. So I'll be mostly glued to the Penguins game. I'm really, dude, we need a win. Like, and Dallas is a good team. This is like a measuring stick. This is a good opportunity. This is a game, dude, we need a dub or I'm going to lose it. But if they shit the bed early and they soil themselves in the first period, tune into the Frozen Frenzy and see what ESPN's got cooking up to really try to kind of grow the viewing in the game a bit and have this action-packed evening, all 32 teams playing from, I think it's like 4 Eastern.
I believe the puck drop is 6 Eastern. Is the earliest puck drop, and you're going to be basically be able to watch hockey until like 2 a.m. Eastern time. So, it's going to be all over ESPN, all the family and networks there. So, tune in and make sure you catch some good puck, specifically the Penguins, obviously. But hey, pick a team out of a hat, they're playing tomorrow night.
Exactly. It'll be a good day. So, that's all I got.
All right, so for Snell, I'm Robbie. Garrett is not here, as you can quite literally tell. He will be back later in this week at some point once he gets freed from whatever prison he's in right now. He apparently robbed some homeless guy down in Pittsburgh over the weekend and was thrown in prison. So,
or it's that thing, it's like that guy, you see that tweet that went out where it was like somebody like tweeted in Pittsburgh that they were being like chased by like a podcast host?
Yeah, that was a couple weeks ago. That was back before the season, it might even have been August. Some guy called the cops because he's supposedly being followed by a local podcast host, and I made the joke that Garrett was the one that was doing the following, so
he's back at that.
So if you see our faithful leader crawling the streets of Pittsburgh, please just don't feed him. Just call the cop. Don't give him anything after midnight. He'll turn into the gremlin. As for Snell, I'm Robbie. Thanks for tuning in for Mailbag Part 1. We will talk to you guys later in the week.